But I can see that decision making in COVID is very difficult. The situation is very dynamic, and so you place
a lot of focus on consultation with CXC. May I ask you, where does the government of Barbados feature in all of this?
So certainly the government of Barbados is a participating territory in the in CXC, and it constitutes one vote out of the 16 or 20 member states who comprise the council. So without doubt, the government of Barbados has a role to play, and in that connection, I think that the ministry should remember that government is called upon and constituted to act in the best interest of its citizens. So in that connection, certainly.
Because I have to tie that to the observation which was made by the 17-year-old student who called us and said that there were discussions with the Ministry of Education earlier, which in her judgment, the inputs and the outputs didn't match. And, you know, so in all of this, one would expect that the Ministry of Education has a role to play in, as you alluded to it, protecting the interests of the Barbadian students who may feel aggrieved about what has taken place. Agreed?
Without a doubt, the ministry certainly has a role to play. And I'm not in full possession of the facts, so I can't say whether or not the role is being performed. But what I can say is that sometimes there was the English jurist who would have said that justice must not only be done, but it must be seen to be done. And sometimes that is an issue that we have in the Caribbean, not only in respect of justice, but in many things. So that if you are doing and performing a particular function, you must not only do it, but you must also, people must see you doing it to have a certain level of confidence.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much for your contribution.
I
also want to ask the two young ladies who spoke with me earlier, Amanda and the other person, the 26-year-old, please call and leave your contact information with the producer, Mr. John Stout, because it is quite possible that you can assist us further in examining this critical area that you opened up in today's discussions on Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program. That's for our next caller. Hello.
Hi, good afternoon. Am I on air?
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. This is my first time calling. I'm also 17 years of age, and I would just like to expand on what the young lady said about CXC. So I think the state farmers especially, we are under a lot of mental strain. I can't really blame the teachers because the teachers are trying to follow up with, you know, completing the syllabi and going accordingly to what CXC puts in front of them. So I can't really blame them for sending work all the time, work on top of work, but I think it is causing a lot of mental strain for sixth formers and those fourth and fifth formers who are doing the CXC exams this year.
How do you feel about the timing of the exams?
I don't think it's a great timing because last year, after all the multiple choice mess with gradings, they sent back our results a bit later after the school year. So then the state farmers joined after the school year. So we really and truly only had 6 or so weeks of school And we were also cut in half, so like the group A and group B, as the other young lady explained. So we really did not have that much school. And I think it's just causing a lot of pressure and mental strain on those fifth and sixth formers especially. Because CAPE is just 1 year. You have 1 year to learn, and then, boom, exam. So I think it's a lot of pressure. And then over.
So how are you going to try to... How are you going to try to adjust to it? Let's assume that this is the decision. They're going to work towards that decision, and they're not going to change the position on it. How would you adjust to suit?
Well, I've tried revising and learning on my own, reading from the syllabus and trying to do work on my own, but it is a lot of strain, especially like as I don't have a teacher there to tell me I'm right from wrong, or, you know, the support from teachers, because it's just online that you're hearing them or seeing them sometimes. So I don't feel like we have a lot of support or guidance.
How are you coping in all of this, therefore?
I'm a very studious student, so it's very hard on me. And sometimes I will have, like, mental breakdowns, and I will have to miss certain sessions of school or, like, a day of school to really rejuvenate myself and try to cope with for the next day.
How deep are your mental breakdowns?
Pardon me?
How deep are your breakdowns? Are you called? You talk about mental breakdowns. How deep?
On a scale of 1 to 10, I would say a 7. It's just very stressful, and it's just trying to get the work done on top of work.
But you're able to recover quickly. There's nothing major in your case.
I wouldn't say major, but hearing from other students, my friends and stuff, they have also gone through this mental scarring.
And therefore, in all of this, you too want to see more attention paid to what is happening to the younger people in our communities coming out of COVID.
Yes, please. And those doing exams. And then also over the weekend, I read that the Barbados Union of Teachers, they were disagreeing on the face-to-face returning of school. And I think that these students who are sitting exams really need that face-to-face return of school. Even though I know they're concerned about the safety, but still majority of us are still on the age to get the vaccine. So,
okay, well, thank you very much for your contribution. Down to brass tacks. It's 12:20. Hello?
Yeah, good afternoon. Mr. Ellis, you have a very good program today. I want to at least just the first part of the sentiment made by one of your mail callers. I'm going to give it to him, but something that was stolen years ago. A doctor once said to me, when a doctor gets sick, he sees another doctor. He continues to say this. Even psychiatrists have to see other psychiatrists. Because after sitting down and listening to people's problems and trying to figure out their problems, some of it does at times rub off on them. So don't think that because a psychiatrist might close his door and go home, put away his wife and go home, that's necessary. He goes away completely unscathed. It's something that we should always remember. And perhaps if we remember that, we wouldn't be so, I don't know how to put it, but treating people who have problems badly. Because it can happen to anybody, you know. It can happen to the most well-rounded person. Something just happens, and it just triggers something. You need help. And also, don't be afraid of any foolish stigma. If you need help, go and see some person, see a counselor, psychiatrist, whatever. Don't even watch people say. That's just stupidness. Anyway, you have a good afternoon.
Thank you for calling. And you do the same. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hello, good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Am I on air? Oh, okay. Good morning. I am also a student, 17 years of age.
Yes.
So my perspective on the CSC matter, I have lived through that in fifth form, and I know how taxing it is. I remember many nights, and this was currently in fifth form, many nights where I have to sacrifice my time, and I know it's my personal responsibility. I cut down my internet usage, and I hate the books very much. And yes, I am a nerdy child, but even so, I know what is my first personal responsibility and what is expected of me. But even so, I know many other children that had to go through the same problem as me. And the result of what they tried for, it didn't come out as planned. Many of them had to repeat. Are even those in sixth form, which were did very well, they were given the negative hand, they also had to repeat in sixth form as well. I'm currently in sixth form. I can tell you this for sure. It's a completely different ballgame to CSC, which we had in fifth form. It is a vast syllabus. And as a science student, you are expected to memorize all of this information. And that is understandable. But there are certain things which you cannot learn by yourself doing virtual labs are going on YouTube. These include technical skills, like laboratory skills. And I know many others who are in metalworks or woodworks.
You need face-to-face, therefore.
Yes, please. I understand that there is a problem having face-to-face, and I understand the risks. But my main problem is that CSC is well known for putting specific questions based on laboratory skills which we'll learn. And I can say this from my experience. When you actually do the lab and carry it out, you know more than what you will know from a video. You know the sources of errors. You know how to change any variables that need to be changing so that you can get an expected result. But now that I can't exactly do that, how am I going to get those skills that are required?
For you, the practical experience is crucial as a science student. Now, what would you recommend in the circumstances?
I will recommend a longer time frame, and also, if possible, if they can restructure some of the questions as well. The reason why I state this is because, again, yes, you can memorize things online, but to apply them is completely different. To have that personal experience gives you a step above. And the time frame is not enough to actually come across that whole syllabus, frankly speaking.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for calling. Down to brass tacks.
Hello.
Yes, welcome.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
I was just wondering, the ministry has indicated that these kids in lower six, as well as upper six, as well as fifth form, they have the option of deferring their examinations without penalty for an entire year. So, to me, that gives them the option to relieve the pressure on themselves and on the teachers if they exercise that option. And at fifth, while people may perceive that losing a year is catastrophic, they're only 18 or 19. In 20 years' time, the fact that they graduated school at 18 or 19 will make absolutely no difference to their lives. So I was just wondering whether the kids are being advised and parents are seeking to guide the kids.
Doesn't that have implications for some scholarships?
No, the first year in lower six, you already have your grades, and whatever those grades are, they will carry forward for the next time you sit, which should be next year rather than this year. A matter of fact, were I in lower six, I would take the option to defer, because what I would have had 2 years in lower six to consolidate, and I would not have the chance of my scholarship, ability to get a scholarship compromised by this year being such a difficult year for them. So,
you know, part of what I'm hearing here, though, is that in all of this, it seems as though the missing element is the dialogue. They come across, from what they are telling us, as being concerned about the fact that decisions have been made, but there hasn't been that back and forth between them and those making the decisions so that all the relevant factors are taken into consideration. And that has come through as part of the complaint that I've heard.
Yeah, I agree with them 100%. I think that has been a breakdown in many of our institutions, not having the dialogue with the stakeholders as would be necessary. I believe that the kids should have a say. I mean, this Easter holiday is soon upon us, and that's an opportunity to get the kids back up to possibly either via a Zoom, a large Zoom meeting or a socially distanced meeting at the gymnasium where you have representatives of the school, not every single student, and for them to articulate, and maybe for the ministry to say, listen, this is an option that you have on the table. The first thing I understand is
well, sorry about this, but we're going to have to break our conversation here because we're going to StarCom Network News next. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon. At 12:47, welcome to Down to Brass Tacks, going until 2 o'clock today. So you would think that this proposed increase in the minimum wage is all good news for all of those who are concerned. But you should hear this. This person says, I have worked for a company for over 8 years in the banking section. I started off earning $10.50 an hour. I had an increase to $11.53 about 2 years ago. My contract is a 12-hour day, 60 hours a week. I work sometimes up to 14, even 18 hours, and no overtime is paid. Here now is the problem. Since the new minimum wage comes into effect on April 1st, changes are coming. Our hours have been cut to 8 hours a day or 40 hours a week. What is said is that because of the new bill, if we work over 40 hours, we have to be paid overtime. Since the company is not willing to pay us overtime, they took the other route and instead cut the hours. Mr. Ellis, gas gone up, bus fare gone up. My bus fare is $21 a day since I have to take 3 buses. Pray tell me how we can live off of that. By the way, the security guard's wage going up from $7.50 an hour to $9 an hour. However, not in the banking department. We remain the same, but less hours. The writer concludes, I am deeply troubled. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program.
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon, ma'am.
Hi, this is actually my first time calling. And I've been
pleasure to have you.
Call. Thank you. I've been moved to call because of an article in one of the papers, I believe it was yesterday, stating that there was an image going around of a child in the government industrial school that was held naked in solitary confinement. And Marcia Hines Lane, who's been outspoken about it, spoke in the article. And I wasn't able to listen to your whole show today, but I am just surprised at the lack of outrage over this. Like, I feel this should be breaking news. This is happening in our country. And while I'm so happy to hear these students that called you earlier, and I feel so much pride to hear these 16 and 17-year-olds speaking like this, we should also be listening to all children in our society. You know, this is not rehabilitation. This is not counseling. This is barbaric types of punishment that's happening in Barbados in 2021. Like, why are people not out in the streets at this moment wanting to know what is going on? And just a quick Google shows you articles I can find as far back as 2016 and probably before, where people are calling for investigations, they're calling reform of the institutions. How are we still having this conversation? I was saying, I think it was a few months ago, or maybe I can't remember the exact date, when Minister Abrams said, again, with complaint coming from the institution, that he was waiting on a report. So shouldn't it be made public knowledge if he's received the report, how long the report is going to take, and what could be more urgent than this report when children's lives can be at risk?
Will you ask, how is it that we continue to have this as a problem? I read the article, and what stood out for me was that it was said that this is a practice that has been going on for quite some time, and there are people who are opposed to it. Indeed, this practice might have been going on for several years, given the history of how people have been treated when they've been sent to the government industrial schools. It is unacceptable. And
Definitely.
Barbados needs more than just a comment to the effect that I'm awaiting a report. Because on many occasions, these reports never come to us. The circumstances are treated in such a manner as to suggest that you need to keep them private or confidential, because you don't want to expose the children to any more harm and that sort of thing. And I understand that.
Yes,
but what is
course,
more
that's,
important?
That's understandable.
What is more important, though, is genuine reform of the way that we are treating these people. These are usually among the poorest and more disadvantaged people of society. And we have a natural attitude towards how we treat the poor and the disadvantaged. There is a whole set of evidence around us all I know. This whole COVID situation has shown it as well. Sometimes what is most distressing is that we don't have a sense of who the people in power want to please and why they want to please them in the way that they go about doing so. Because many of these people have come from the bottom of this society, like the very people that they're treating so badly. And it looks as though we are conditioned as a people to go out of our way to prove to the people who have power and influence that we can outdo them when it comes to treating our own badly. This is just what has played out here.
I was going to say also that Barbados is not ready for a conversation about prison reform because of what you're saying, because as a society, we seem to like to see people beat and punished and starved and degraded. So we're not even ready for that conversation. But this is children. And if you're treating children like this, and the conversation has been going on in social media today, and people much more educated than myself have said, these children are almost always coming from situations where they've been abused, mistreated, sexually abused, raped, all of this. And we are punishing the victims because then they're acting out. But these children are 9, 10, 11, 12. What are they going to do if nobody's helping them out of a difficult situation? So instead of finding out where the cause of these issues are, we're punishing these children. The law for wandering is still on the books after a whole discussion in recent times about getting it abolished from the law. It is ridiculous that a child is leaving home and we're not asking, why are you leaving home? What is so uncomfortable about your house? And instead, we're sending them to an institution where they're being put in solitary confinement as a practice, as a standard. When they enter the institution, they're put in there for 2 weeks. Like in other countries,
the question is why?
The
question is why? Why is it necessary to put a child through that process as soon as it goes in there? How far back does this go? And why is it that that cannot be brought to a halt? This requires more than just, I am awaiting a report. The report may relate to this specific instance, but we need to find out what is being done about these systemic practices that put these children at greater risk. Why can't we put an end to this nonsense? I agree with you 100%.
This is totally not as hard as 2016, asking for reform and investigations into atrocious practices. So we're talking about two governments that have dropped the ball on our children.
More than two.
Well, I should say two parties. Not two governments, two parties. Because this is years that this is going on. And how many more people need to say, I need an investigation, this is horrible. And then the first child that dies of suicide up there or something, then everybody's going to be saying this is horrific. It's horrific now. We don't need to wait on children to die for it to be horrific. These children go into society damaged. They're not, the reports are saying they're not getting regular schooling. They're coming out of there without the tools to help them readjust to regular life. And you're sending them back out close to adulthood and then expecting that they survive. And so I was reading something this morning saying they're being put back into situations where they were abused, where they had a difficult time. Some of them may have learning difficulties or mental issues, and they've been punished because of this. So it just moved me today to call, and I'm saying, why is this not a flashing headline today that this happened to a child? And I was just, I'm shaking still talking to you. It's so outrageous.
But somebody is raising the question of how do you deal with somebody who is allegedly suicidal, whether this is not the appropriate way to deal with a person who is allegedly suicidal. How do you respond to that?
Well, first things, we have a psychiatric hospital, and it is staffed with professionals that deal with this on a daily basis. So unless that they can say they have a full staff and an appropriate room that these children can be kept safely in, I don't think that that's the place to deal with it. And as I'm way outside of this field, so somebody else can speak on this, but I cannot imagine that international standards allow for even adults to be stripped naked and be kept in a room without even a mattress. How can that be in any way helpful to somebody that's suicidal, far less a 14-year-old child? We're talking about children. We're not talking about big, hard-back people, and they should not even be treated like that. So instead of putting them in a safe environment where you're trying to find the onus of why they're suicidal and helping them out of that situation, you throw them into somewhere for 2 weeks isolated. Right now, the world is crying out about being isolated in their own homes. So now picture a child naked on a concrete floor for 2 weeks, and then tell me if that's the way to treat suicide.
All right, ma'am. Thank you very much for raising the concern. This person says, I'm a security officer. With the minimum wage about to be legislated in Barbados, hourly paid security officers are anticipating the changes with some trepidation. A raise of a minimum hourly wage from $77 to $9.75 may appear at first glance to be a start. However, some security establishments are already preparing to cut the hours officers work. I'll give you an example. A security officer currently working for $7 an hour routinely works 10 to 13 hours per day to get a livable wage. With the proposed increase in the hourly wage and a reduced 40-hour week, a security officer will take home just $390 per week, way below a livable wage. Pray tell me, Mr. Ellis, how are persons in this category expected to survive? This is Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program. Hello.